It's deja vu. This moment's happened before.
You have found the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Hello, and welcome to the Kaleidoscope Gallery. I'm your host, Paul, and alongside regular contributor, Dave, we will be exploring brain privacy and the upcoming cognitive wars. A Harvard scientist's search for a possible alien probe. The strange mushroom-powered computers. We listen to recordings of the sun humming and screaming. And a tourist's guide to majestic destinations in our own solar system. So let's step into the first exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Welcome to the amazing world of UFO Top Secret. We cannot help but wonder what creatures might be waiting out there in the vast void of space, waiting patiently for man to contact them. What is this strange glowing light? Is it a beacon from an alien civilization telling man that he is not alone in the uncharted depths of the universe? What was it? Perhaps someday we will find out, but perhaps we will never know.
Harvard physicist Avi Loeb, the world's leading expert in alien discovery, is gearing up for his most ambitious mission to date, one that could go down in history. Loeb is spearheading a $1.5 million expedition to Papua New Guinea in search of fragments from a highly unusual meteorite that crashed just off the Pacific nation's coast back in 2014. Its composition of extremely hard rock or metal suggests that it may not be a typical meteorite, but instead an extraterrestrial probe. If proven true, this discovery could be groundbreaking.
The headline is, a Harvard physicist is racing to prove this meteorite is an alien probe. The world's top alien hunter is about to embark on his most ambitious and potentially history-making mission yet. So he's gone to Papua New Guinea to search for fragments of a very strange meteorite that he thinks could possibly be an alien probe. What do you know about this?
My understanding was he thinks he's narrowed down where a chunk of this meteorite could be sitting at the bottom of the sea. And he is an expert, and he's a Harvard scientist, and he's got big, reasonable funding to do it, like $1.5 million. He could probably rent a boat for that, you know, get some geo trackers or whatever.
Yeah. And so he wants to find us, but what part of it does he think might be an alien probe?
So I'm noticing here that he convinced the Pentagon to release the full fireball data. And when they looked at the data, that's when they gave him the money to go and find a piece of it. They said it was the hardest meteorite on record.
Wow.
Oh, he needed precise telemetry for the meteorite's path, and the military would not provide it. So he checked nearby earthquake centers. This guy's doing his work.
And what he's saying is these fragments of this meteor, he's suspicious that they're actually artificial and therefore, you know, constructed by an intelligence, an alien intelligence. Wow.
Well, that is a powerful... It's a powerful thought. Now, if an alien intelligence sent a probe to Earth, it would be pretty poor design if it broke up into a million pieces and you had to just go find a little... Like, something went wrong with this probe.
I guess so, yeah.
It must have malfunctioned. This meteor, quote-unquote, was actually a probe, and it exploded, like a meteor would actually normally do. When he examined this fireball database, and I think that's pretty cool. I would like to get my hands on the fireball database. He has reasons to believe that it's artificial, and that part I'm not too sure about why, but he really believes it.
I think I need access to the fireball database as well. There are so many times I'm like, I gotta, if I can look this fireball up. What are its stats? So where in the article does it talk about how it become, or what made him think it was an alien probe? There was something in there.
Let's see. When a very odd, shiny, football field-sized object streaked across then out of the solar system in 2017, Loeb was among the first scientists to say out loud what others may only have been thinking. This object, which scientists later named Umamamamawa, Hawaiian for scout, might be an alien probe.
On October 19, 2017, at the Haleakala Observatory in Hawaii, human beings detected the first ever visitor from interstellar space. An object from outside our own solar system.
A pair of Harvard scientists say a massive, fast-moving visitor to our solar system may have been a probe sent by an advanced alien civilization.
It's an alien spacecraft.
Some sort of alien technology, perhaps exploring the cosmos.
It's called Oumuamua, which roughly translates as messenger from the past reaching out to us in Hawaiian. Then, something even more strange happened. Upon leaving the inner solar system, astronomers reported an unexpected acceleration, only adding to the hypothesis that Oumuamua was some sort of alien creation. But there are a lot of questions about Oumuamua and space that will remain unanswered.
Yeah, so this guy, he's well into the idea that there's alien probes coming here, even, and that this guy's a true believer. The headline says he's racing to prove this meteorite is an alien probe.
So, how will he prove it?
Well, we'll have to stay tuned to this one day. It's not really based on evidence, is it? No, I don't think so.
Is this a second probe? Right, because Oumuamua was our first ever interstellar object detected passing through our solar system. So I remember this. This was insane. Like, it's like, it looked like a giant cigar, and it was just like cruising through our solar system.
But was it, what was the final conclusion about it? Was there a conclusion about this?
I know it could be extraterrestrial in nature. In fact, it almost certainly is. Now, whether it was alive or sent by the living, how it was powered, or whether it was just a crazy space cigar that someone spat out and just kept floating for years across the galaxies.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this might be almost like hopeful thinking of certain scientists, because a lot of scientists are inspired by science fiction.
Right, because hypotheses start with the imagination.
Manipulating the brain to change your reality, with or without your consent. It's the stuff science fiction movies are made of.
He's learned.
But fiction is quickly becoming reality. Technology is making extraordinary scientific strides to help those who can't speak or walk. Soon, Alzheimer victims may be able to recover memories. But just like nuclear power, it has the potential to be used maliciously.
Everyone in the world is worried about the privacy of their data. This is nothing compared to the privacy of your thoughts. So technology companies, if they have access to brain data, they may be able to decipher the intention of your behavior.
Neurotechnologies are the new frontier. They can read what's happening in your brain and what you're thinking, even your subconscious.
That means that our free will is in danger. You are your mind. If someone can manipulate or control your mind, or introduce ideas that aren't yours, you've lost your freedom as a human being.
The professor trying to protect our private thoughts from technology. The battle for your brain, the intrusions into the mind are so close that lawmakers should enact protections. Wow. Private thoughts may not be private for much longer, and this is an article in The Guardian, heralding a nightmarish world where political views, thoughts, stray obsessions, and feelings could be interrogated and punished, all thanks to advances in neural technology.
The best way to maintain brain privacy is do not allow wearable tech to read your mind. Like, cut it off now, put a bunch of rules in place that say, if you're going to plug into my brain, you cannot steal anything. Because otherwise, everyone's going to plug in just like they did with social media, and they're like, boop, 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 oh, fuck, too late. So if we stop it now versus like, oh, be ready for the brain privacy problems we're going to have. Like, the first step is don't let someone plug into your brain, okay? That's the first step to brain privacy. Do not get a port built into the back of your neck. The second step is, hey, if you've got the port because there's certain conveniences attached to plugging in, do not give them access to your memory banks. Do not give them access to your emotional cortex. It's purely download. That's what I'm trying to say. Do not allow upload.
Oh, okay.
No uploads allowed. That's brain privacy. But she's getting ahead of it. Like, she's like, okay, well, everyone's going to fucking get their brain plugged in like they plugged themselves into social media and lost their privacy. Now it's going to get even worse because, like, what you don't choose to post, they're going to be just raping right out of your fucking mind matter.
There are people, like, who are anxious to breach that brain privacy and upload to your brain and alter bits of your brain as you pass on your thoughts, pass on your passwords through Neuralink.
Yeah, yeah. Like, wake up in the morning and turn on incognito mode.
Stealth.
Yeah, put like a full human VPN around you so they can't exactly tell where you are right away. You'd need teams of security people.
Concerns about military-focused neuroscience called the sixth dimension of warfare. Cognitive warfare.
The sixth dimension of warfare. Oh, I see. So if one country plugs in to the brains of everybody in the enemy country, that's the ultimate propaganda machine. So, like, Russia could plug into the brains of, like, maybe, let's say there's 200 million Americans who'll plug into the virtual neural connector. And those 200 million Americans can be forced to vote for the candidate of choice, or to think in a certain way, or to lay down their arms in a conflict situation. It's the ultimate mind control. It's the hypnosis of the future. People have proven that they will just give it up. So why wouldn't they do this too? Like, oh, you know, everyone wants, like, it's going to probably be, the first will be like the people who trust have implanted their neck will be apples, and they'll be like fucking purple or something. Like, oh, it's so cute. It's so small. It's so cute and so small. I'll put it in and, like, become like getting an earring or something. And then, like,
it'll be fashionable.
Yeah. And then you, like, you plug in and suddenly you're like, fucking everything is being taken from you. Your person.
And then you wouldn't even know if your own thoughts were your own thoughts. Like, you wouldn't be sure. But you'd have to have some kind of firewall. I mean, this is what they're talking about. Brain privacy controls and making those and embedding that in law for the upcoming brain control wars.
Wow. It's the age of ravine. World War ravine. You know, suddenly everybody in China will be like dancing like a chicken. That's how we'll win the war.
Yes. Yeah, so like one day you wake up, you realize your entire nation, your brains have been hacked.
And there'll be some, like, professional hypnotist on the other end of a fucking terminal typing in what to make everybody do. Like, okay, now you're all zombies. Do-do-do-do-do, yeah. Now you're lying on the floor in the sun. It's a beautiful summer day. And then, like, when the war is over, everyone's like, oh, that was the best thing ever. At the best time, I would do that again.
Computers interfacing with organic material, namely humans, has been science fiction fodder for decades. But we haven't seen organic matter incorporated into a computer until now. Researchers at the Unconventional Computing Laboratory from the University of West England have developed a computer that runs on mushrooms. Yes, you heard me right. These researchers have developed a computer that uses mycelia. Mycelium, the delicate hair-like parts of the mushroom's root system, can transmit electrical signals similar to how the human brain works. Because of mycelium's traits, researchers could replace several motherboard components with mushroom analogs capable of transmitting electrical impulses that can be translated easily into binary.
Here we have a remarkable article called, the headline is, and this is in a Popular Science, "Inside the lab that's growing mushroom computers, the lead researcher says he is planning to make, quote, a brain for mushrooms."
That's an outstanding idea. It's like almost like a vegetarian brain. It's like beyond, they made meat from mushrooms, or they've mock meated. So it's kind of like a mock brain, or beyond brain.
If you're a vegetarian, you go to a restaurant and there's a portobello mushroom burger on the menu, trust me, do not order it.
No, that's not a burger. That's like a big mushroom on a bun.
It's a giant mushroom on a bun with, like, kind of nothing else either. But anyway.
Do I see in that picture that he's actually attached, like, little diodes to the plant?
Upon first glance, the unconventional computing laboratory looks like a regular workspace. But if you look closely, anomalies start to appear. There are large plastic containers with electrodes sticking out of a foam-like substance, and a massive motherboard with tiny oyster mushrooms growing on top of it.
Oh, I like this word, wetware. It was founded in 2001 with the belief that the computers of the coming century will be made of chemical or living systems, or wetware, that are going to work in harmony with hardware and software. Hardware, software, and wetware. Interesting.
And it's definitely an idea that has gained ground recently, as seen through experimental biology-based algorithms and prototypes of microbe sensors and kombucha circuit boards. Kombucha.
Kombucha circuit boards. Do they make those infused with THC as well?
Oh, that would be interesting. In other words, they're trying to see if mushrooms can carry out computing and sensing functions. And here we get a picture of a mushroom motherboard, which is, it looks like the inside of an Apple IIe computer, covered in all different types of mushrooms. I think there's some maitake there.
It's like some guy was like eating his lunch and made a giant mess on his electrical workboard. He was eating like hickory sticks and like mash. It actually looks like he some kind of a margarine and onion soup paste. What the hell? So this is how they're doing it? They're like throwing like chopped mushrooms on a motherboard and hoping magic happens?
Well, you were referring to mycelium, the branching web-like root structure of the fungus, and you were talking about the internet of the forest floor. This mycelium acts as conductors just as well as electronic components of a computer, and they can send and receive signals as well as retain them.
I mix mycelium cultures with hemp or with wood shavings, and then place it in closed plastic boxes and allow the mycelium to colonize the substrate, so everything then looks white. It becomes electrical activity, and then we get the response. The response? So what it, does it say here what the response is? Like, is there, are the mushrooms talking back?
Well, it goes on here, Dave, to refer to what you were talking about earlier, about the mycelium network in forest floors, where trees and plants send messages to each other through these, I guess, electrical signals. But already scientists know that mushrooms stay connected with the environment and the organisms around them using a kind of internet communication, referred to as the Wood Wide Web.
The Wood Wide Web. Sounds kind of a lot of clever names here. What was it? Wetware and the Wood Wide Web? I'm going to just go out to Apple, to their wetware store. I got to put on like a rain jacket before I go in, because it's really splashy and gross. And I'm going to pick up some wetware.
It's amazing mushrooms. And mushrooms are amazing, Dave. I think you would agree, right?
Well, the more I learn about them, the more I understand how they're like the media of the species. Yeah, they're the communicators. We've had talks about the spore network, and that the spores are the way we are connected to them, because we're breathing them in every day. We've got to set up our brain privacy for this. Spores, because the mushrooms know everything about us already. They're probably organizing right now. They're like, okay, these guys are trying to stick us on their computers. We're not going to work for them. Let's get together and organize and shut those freaking humans down, because no good can come from this. Well, it's encouraging. I'm glad someone's doing experiments. And it's very interesting and a little bit harrowing to see that combo of organic and the wetware hardware combo. It's not good, because it's going to rust the hardware. They need to create some kind of a barrier. You can't just throw a bunch of wet shrooms on your fucking computer and expect shit's going to happen.
Yeah, and if you had a mushroom computer in your home, what kind of environmental conditions does it have to be in? Does it have to be in your basement?
Tropical, yeah.
You are inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Imagine you're walking through a forest. Everything might seem quiet, but beneath your feet is a flurry of conversation. All the plants around you are actually talking to each other. The trees and the shrubs and the flowers are passing information back and forth with serious life and death consequences. So how are they communicating? They're using a giant network of fungi, so pervasive and powerful that some scientists have started comparing it to the internet. They're calling it the Wood Wide Web.
But yeah, I guess that now that the mushrooms do know through the Wood Wide Web, which in some way, obviously, we're ultimately part of it, or at least our ancestors were. Wood is everywhere, so it's the whole planet is a Wood Wide Web.
I suppose.
And these guys are basically demonstrating that it's possible to implement computation with mycelium. So we're eventually going to find a way to tap into this Wood Wide Web, and they're going to need, this Wood Wide Web is going to need brain privacy against humans.
I mean, if we could set it, get a terminal connected to the Wood Wide Web, I assume the key to that is that get the maple syrup farmers, because they're already tapping into the trees. And every drip that comes out of there is just filled with information. Do you remember the great maple syrup heist of like 2015 or something like that, when like half of Canada's maple syrup crop was stolen?
Our next story is one of the weirdest thefts we've ever come across. A heist where the loot was something no one ever thought to protect. maple syrup. The syrup was stored in a warehouse in Quebec, thousands upon thousands of barrels of it. And while you're probably thinking, so what, it's maple syrup, consider the fact it's worth 13 times the price of crude oil.
And I was like, who would steal maple syrup? Now it all makes sense. It was the folks who monitor the Wood Wide Web trying to get information, trying to steal the sweet knowledge. And then in restaurants, they almost never serve it. They give you like simulated syrups, like corn syrup with like maple flavor.
Well, most people haven't had real maple syrup. Around the world, pancake syrup, so-called, it's fake.
You're right. I think as Canadians, we're spoiled. And like we get, when we ingest that maple syrup, we're ingesting half the information in the Wood Wide Web. Damn, I've got to log in.
While billions of stars are scattered throughout the universe, the one at the center of our solar system plays a special role for us here on Earth. Our sun formed about 4.5 billion years ago in the Milky Way galaxy's Orion Spur. It was born when a cloud of dust and gas, known as a solar nebula, collapsed. And in the middle of this formation, matter condensed into a burning ball of gas that became our sun. The sun's fiery nature, along with a tremendous gravitational pull and an extensive magnetic field, helped it to become the heart of our solar system.
But going back to the Hindustan Times, the headline is surreal. NASA shares deafening screams of the sun. Audio tech aboard the NASA Solar and Helioscopic Observatory has detected sound waves emerging from the sun. It can drive anyone deaf.
So is the sun crying for help? Like, is NASA asking us to do something about this? Like, why are they releasing these sounds of the screams? Like, they're saying, someone go and rescue the sun because it's in trouble if it's screaming.
Our sun makes a really eerie sound that is so loud it could even deafen everyone on Earth. This would happen if sound could propagate through space. Because it doesn't, we've never heard it before.
That's a heavy line. Because it doesn't. Yeah, thanks for letting us know.
But apparently, Dave, the NASA Solar and Helioscopic Observatory has managed to recapture the sound using an instrument known as the Michelson Doppelganger Imager.
Here, let me just first say, like, why are you capturing sound with an imager? This is not real sound. This is like, oh, computer, I've got this, like, graph of some images I picked up. Can you turn that into a sound? Like, I'm probably ChatGPT could do that. And I'm going, like, oh, fuck, the sun is screaming. Send Bruce Willis to fucking fly directly into it and give it a pat on the back.
Posting the raw audio on YouTube, the official YouTube channel of NASA said, the unfiltered sound data was collected and then only the Doppler velocity data that had been averaged, whatever. It did something to it, and here we got the sound. Should we listen to it, Dave?
Yes, please.
This is the sun. The sound of the sun screaming. Raw audio from NASA.
I don't know, that sounds more like humming, like it's having a great day. It sounds like a pleasant hum.
So it's not really... How is that a screaming sound?
This sounds like screaming to you. Am I missing the upper range here?
No,
it sounds like, oh, it sounds more like a Tuvan throat singing.
Oh.
Now I want to know, do they have recordings of the sun like crying out in joy, the sun laughing, the sun talking? What language is the sun talking in? If the sun is screaming, why won't someone throw it a bone and, like, you know, give it a hug or whatever? You could hug the sun.
Well, there we go. So, I mean, I think that we can definitely say that that headline from the Hindustan Times...
It's clickbait.
...was definitely clickbait. Deafening screams of the sun.
No, it's like the kind of humming drone of the sun. Kind of sounds like my fridge.
Now, I don't think that article had the right audio recording in it, because listen to this one I found. This audio recording from NASA of the sun, and it does sound like the sun could be screaming.
The sound of light and heat, the sound of energy. They got to make better use of the solar and heliscopic observatory. If I had a telescope and I could, like, look straight into hell, I'd be watching all the time. I'm sure it's fucking craziness.
You are listening to The Kaleidoscope Gallery. The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
The sun, if seen from its nearest star neighbor, would appear as a bright star among thousands. And from that neighboring star, traveling at the speed of light, it would take more than 4 years to reach the solar system. Four and a half billion years ago, the sun and its planets were born when an immense cloud of hydrogen and cosmic dust began to condense. As the huge cloud collapsed, pulled inward by its own gravity, a massive sphere circled by a great rotating disk of gas and dust took shape. When the central sphere, heated from the energy of its own collapse, reached 1,000,000 degrees, nuclear fusion was ignited. And so, the sun began to shine. The young planets emerged, bathed in radiant sunlight. Swinging in vast orbits around the sun, the planets evolved for billions of years, and each became unique.
From Gizmodo.com, see 14 mind-blowing places in our solar system.
Are they offering us a tour here? Like, can we actually book a trip?
Mars's Olympus Mons, one of the largest volcanoes in the solar system, it's 15 miles high.
This is Mars. 3 billion years ago, it had active volcanoes. One still remains. The largest volcano in the solar system. The cliffs leading to it are over 9 kilometers high. Mount Everest would sit comfortably in their shadow, and those are just the foothills. This is the awe-inspiring Olympus Mons. It covers an area the size of Arizona. Its crater alone is 85 kilometers wide.
That's wild. That's a huge volcano. Think about the lava explosions that could come out of that volcano. 15 miles high and 375 miles around? That is a volcano with heft. That's a planet-busting volcano.
And liftoff of the Cassini spacecraft on a billion-mile trek to Saturn.
The Cassini spacecraft is a flagship mission from NASA that was meant to study the Saturnian system, and one of the primary science targets in the Saturnian system is Titan. And Titan is just this explorer's dream. It has this fundamental story of exploration behind it, and intrigue and mystery.
Jupiter Inlet Tracking Station now acquiring data.
Cassini has been in the Saturn system for 10 years collecting data and still surprises us. In this particular instance, the science team, when we first saw the images that came down, saw this feature that we're calling the Magic Island now.
We started to investigate what was this splotch feature, whether it's an image processing error or some sort of artificial, an artifact, essentially. And that analysis showed that this feature was real. It's a geophysical phenomenon occurring on Titan.
Titan's Magic Island.
Magic Island? I want to go there. Is that like kind of like Fantasy Island?
My dear guests, I am Mr. Raw, your host. Welcome to Fantasy Island.
Scientists aren't entirely sure what it is, citing such possibilities as waves, bubbles, floating solids, and suspended solids.
Suspended solids.
Hey there, adrenaline junkies. Shoot for the moon, why don't you? Come visit us at the Verona Rupes Resort on beautiful Miranda. Just a quick 1.7 billion mile jaunt from Earth, this little moon is big on excitement with some of the most extreme topography in the solar system. Verona Rupes is the tallest cliff in the known universe. Standing 20 kilometers high, this majestic monolith offers unparalleled panoramas and tempts thrill seekers from across the solar system, making it the ideal spot for our interplanetary resort. Base jumpers will have plenty of time to soak in the scenery, since Miranda's gravity is much less punishing than our own, meaning that what would be a quick 2-minute free fall on Earth becomes a leisurely 12-minute glide down to the surface of Miranda.
Verona Rupes. Cliff on Uranus's moon Miranda. Who comes up with these names, Verona Rupes?
This cliff on Uranus's moon Miranda? For perspective, Verona Rupes is 10 times deeper than the Grand Canyon, which I was just recently at.
Are you not in the Grand Canyon right now?
I am.
You're like 7 feet down into it.
And 10 times deeper, that's quite unfathomable, actually, Dave. A free fall from the top to the bottom should take about 12 minutes. So if you tripped, if this was the tourist attraction on Uranus, if you fell off it, it would take 12 minutes to land to the bottom. So you better bring something to read for the trip down.
Wow. I don't think you're going to have time to read when you're falling off a giant cliff on Uranus. Uranus? How is it properly pronounced?
Well, it's Uranus. No, wait.
Uranus? Uranus.
Uranus.
Uranus?
Uranus.
I always says Uranus.
Oh, I say Uranus.
We should just resolve that once and for all. How do you pronounce Uranus? Are you sure it's Uranus?
We are looking at how to pronounce the name of the seventh planet from the sun, a planet that has the third largest planetary radius and the fourth largest planetary mass in the solar system. We are looking at how to pronounce Uranus. It is generally accepted that it is preferable to stress on the first syllable when you say it rather than on the second one, and say Uranus rather than Uranus, although both pronunciations are possible and correct, a matter of personal preference. Uranus or Uranus, the ice giant planet Uranus.
Uranus.
Uranus. Uranus.
Question has plagued us all, I think.
In March 1979, the Voyager 1 space probe sent the first detailed view of Jupiter's tiny moon, Io. A world once thought of as cold and dead.
And they saw something really weird. They saw this arc next to the moon. It looked almost as if like there was another moon behind it.
And we scratched our heads and said, well, what could that be? Everybody knows that Io is dead, boring, uninteresting. And then people realized, oh my God, it's a volcanic eruption.
We found that it's covered with volcanoes. It is tremendously geologically active. There are volcanoes erupting all the time.
The most volcanically active object in the solar system, featuring lakes of molten silicate lava. But lots of volcanoes exist on Io, but Loki takes the cake.
Is Loki erupting?
Since 2013, Loki has been erupting at roughly 475 days interval. Eruptions lasting for roughly 160 days.
160-day eruption? Jeez.
Next, turning our attention to a different story, just, you know, 34 million miles away.
Turns out Mars might be home to the largest ice rink in the galaxy. Let's look at this thing. Take a look at this stunning new photo of a giant ice crater on the red planet. The dish-shaped basin is almost 55 miles wide. That's nearly twice the size of Ann Arbor.
And get this, it holds roughly 530 cubic miles of frozen ice. That's almost five times the volume of Lake Erie. That is massive. I can't even fathom how big it is.
Wow. Who's up for the most epic game of hockey in the history of the solar system?
I don't know. 81 kilometers is too big. Mars too inhospitable. Why would you go play hockey there? It's amazing that we get these pictures from these places.
Mm-hmm. So some of these are coming from the Cassini, NASA's Cassini.
The fact that strange things seem to be constantly happening on Jupiter was noticed as long ago as back in the 17th century. A giant storm, which is today called the Great Red Spot, was discovered by an Italian astronomer, Giovanni Cassini, in 1665. A recent discovery doesn't yet lend itself to any scientific explanation and seems as if it's on the verge of fantasy. Imagine an atmospheric whirlwind the size of Australia with an area of about 7.7 million square kilometers or about 2.9 million square miles. Now, create six variations of different sizes of this giant vortex and place them each around the first one so that you get a perfectly even hexagon. This sounds crazy. However, such an atmospheric phenomenon was discovered by the Juno spacecraft.
Oh, wow.
This is Saturn.
This thing is a giant storm.
The storm, which measures some 30,000 kilometers across, which is multiple times the width of the Earth, is caused by alternating flows and high-latitude zonal jets. It's undeniably weird, yet another feature of the solar system's most striking planet. Saturn? Yeah, I'd agree. It is a very striking planet.
The hex? I didn't know the hex of Saturn was a thing.
Planet Earth is the home of every life form known to us in the universe. Its age is about a third of the age of the universe, and admit it, it is a thing of beauty. A slightly squashed sphere with a heavy metal core and a lighter surface crust wrapped in a thin sliver of sweet air to breathe. With vast oceans, fertile plains, magnificent mountains, freshwater rivers, streams, lakes and aquifers, orbiting a star which warms us and gives us energy.
Our solar system is home to some really amazing and bizarre places, but absolutely nothing compares to Earth. Our home planet features a highly protective magnetic field, an oxygen-rich atmosphere, well, that's very convenient, copious amounts of liquid water.
Complete tectonic activity. This sounds like some real estate write-up. They shouldn't publish this to the internet.
Move to Earth.
Exactly. Every alien species is like, oh, okay, I'll take this planet.
We hope you've enjoyed this excursion through the Kaleidoscope Gallery. And that you'll join us again next time.
You have been listening to the many colors of the Kaleidoscope Gallery.